The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Derek Frost for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading from the Triangle Business Journal. And we start on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal with the cover story headline, "The Era of Uncertainty. From tariffs and lending changes to AI and shifting sentiments, uncertainty is testing the resiliency of Triangle small businesses." And this is actually a series of three articles that begin inside the Triangle Business Journal. The first one, written by Andy Medici, headlined, "A Perfect Storm. An Uncertain Economy is Pushing Small Businesses to Seek Out Credit, but There Are Obstacles to Navigate." As chief economist for Oakworth Capital Bank, a big part of John Norris's role is pricing risk. In the current environment that's swelling with uncertainty, it's an increasingly complicated task. When banks plan out the year, they figure out how many loans they want to make, and when pricing in risk, Norris said they tend to be a bit more backward-looking. That means that despite the current turmoil over tariffs, banks are still looking to make loans at a steady pace. But that could change quickly as the impact of tariffs and economic uncertainty facing businesses starts to show up in the data. Then, banks will begin to tighten their underwriting and credit standards, especially in industries that may be hardest hit. Norris noted that banks are going to be a little bit leery if they see a slowdown in the economy. "I think it's all systems go until then," he said. His advice? Small businesses worried about funding should secure it now, but small business owners are having a tough time obtaining new credit with high interest rates, largely but not solely to blame for steeper costs. The Federal Reserve Bank of Kansas City, in a recent survey, found new term loans for small businesses dropped 9% in fourth quarter 2024 compared to the same time in 2023. Of those new loans, total balances dropped by 5.6%. Additionally, lending standards, as judged by the Federal Reserve Bank of Kansas City, tightened for the 13th quarter in a row. But for the first time since 2022, loan demand grew at the end of 2024, with a net 4% of lenders that responded to the Federal Reserve Bank survey reporting stronger loan demand. Still, that increased demand was correlated with more rejections, and the credit quality of loan applicants also dropped for the 11th quarter in a row. In short, more business owners are eager to obtain a loan, even though fewer might qualify. "The credit standards are higher. Combined with increased fees and sustained high interest rates, this can lead to capital that is not affordable to many business owners," said Amy Hereford, CEO at small business nonprofit Lyft Fund. "This is also a perfect storm for increased predatory lending activity." This year, despite a mixed economic picture and sweeping tariffs announced by the Trump administration, many businesses are hungry for credit, said Joe Camberato, president of National Business Capital, a small business loan marketplace. To overcome the challenging debt market, some small businesses are shifting their lending away from traditional banks to financial services companies or online lenders. "What's interesting is that there's a huge disconnect between Wall Street and Main Street right now. Even in this high interest rate environment, companies are borrowing money from non-bank lenders, private credit lenders, for real growth opportunities," Camberato said in an email. "We've seen an increase in confidence, which has increased lending, and our outlook is still strong for 2025. Small business owners grow more pessimistic. Some business sentiment indicators have slipped in recent weeks in the face of uncertain tariff policy. The National Federation of Independent Businesses Small Business Optimism Index, for instance, dropped below its 51-year average optimism in March, the same month some new tariff policies were enacted. And the number of business owners who reported in the NFIB survey that their latest loan was harder to obtain than previous attempts grew by a net 6%, the largest monthly increase since September 2023. Meanwhile, 28% of business owners reported in March borrowing on a regular basis, up 4 points for those who said the same in February. Interest rates are unlikely to come down substantially this year as Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell continues to watch inflation amid new and changing tariff policy. "With high interest rate loans, you really have to make sure that you know your numbers and true return on investment in order to make a profitable decision by borrowing money," Camberato said. "Yes, a high interest loan costs more, but if the loan helps you generate strong, profitable growth, the math can still work in your favor." That leaves many small businesses walking a tightrope as they work to refinance older term loans with much lower interest rates or try to go without capital at a time when many businesses may need to invest in new products, services, or facilities. Risks associated with non-traditional lenders. Most small businesses are using credit cards, according to the 2024 Small Business Credit Survey, which found 58% of small business owners relied on a card on a regular basis. Another 50% took out loans, while 34% used lines of credit. Business owners could pick more than one option for their responses. In 2024, 59% of small businesses applied for a loan, with the reason most often cited for applying being to meet operating expenses, followed by expanding or acquiring the business. Among those business owners rejected by a lender, the vast majority cited weak business financials. Overall, fewer small businesses ended up applying for loans at big banks last year, with that share dropping from 44% in 2023 to 39% in 2024. But small business owners who applied to large banks were more likely to be considered low credit risks. Those who were considered to have risky credit were far more likely to apply to online lenders, according to the survey. Right now, a lot of external factors can help or hurt a business, which means owners should work on the foundations of their businesses, said Ryan Rossett, a co-CEO and founder at online lender Credibly. 39% of the more than 7,500 small businesses that took part in the Small Business Credit Survey carried more than $100,000 in debt last year. That's the same percentage as in 2023 and down only slightly from the 40% reported in 2022 and 2021. Small business owners need to consider how much debt they can truly afford and work with reputable lenders, Rossett said. Take on debt responsibly and tie what you're getting to future revenue streams if possible, rather than just trying to cover increased costs, he said. And be prudent on how much debt you take on. Look for little successes and stability before going back for more. Some experts say the best thing a small business owner can do, beyond figuring out how new tariffs will impact them, is to avoid taking on new debt if possible. That will position it to better take advantage of opportunities later, said Joseph Tom, CEO of financial technology firm Applied Data Finance, in an email. Adding debt if profitability is going to be negatively impacted by tariffs and a possible recession leaves the small business owner in a worse spot, Tom said. It might require hunkering down for a period, but we'll provide them better choices, more available credit, and lower interest rates once signs of stability return. And the next article is written by Lauren Onasorge. NC's SBA lenders optimistic despite agency staff cuts. As Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE, cuts continue to make headlines in Washington, D.C., some small businesses, particularly those impacted by tariffs, are in survival mode, and one method for moving forward is a Small Business Administration loan. B.J. Loesch, president of SBA lender Live Oak Bank, said that at least right now his customers aren't feeling the squeeze of DOGE cuts to the agency. Interest is high and loans are being pushed out. It's consistent with what bankers at other institutions are telling Triangle Business Journal, at least right now. Banks have confirmed that the SBA has trimmed staff. The SBA said earlier this year it would cut its employee count by 43% and eliminate non-essential roles, saying it would return the agency to pre-pandemic levels of staffing. In its fiscal 2025 budget, the SBA said it had 5,931 full-time employees. But Loesch said the state of government guaranteed lending continues to be strong in spite of cuts. The worry? That a recession could impact lending overall, something bankers say they're watching cautiously. SBA loans are always for companies to access capital that they may not otherwise qualify for from a bank. When companies can't meet traditional lending terms, the SBA can come in with a guarantee that makes it less risky for a bank such as Live Oak to make a loan. The purpose is to spur economic development. Live Oak, based in Wilmington, is the number one SBA lender nationwide by volume, doing business in 30 different verticals. And despite the SBA staff cuts, Loesch said the program itself continues to be healthy and strong. When asked if staff cuts had complicated or delayed the process, he said, "The short answer is no, we haven't seen anything." It's a statement echoed by M&F Bank CEO Jim Sills, another SBA lender. Sills said that not only has lending not been impacted by staffing cuts as of yet, but that the SBA loans it's extended are sound. He worries more about the potential of a recession to shift that trend, but so far, so good, he says. Loesch said that in downed economies, SBA lending interest can increase as banks tighten their traditional loan programs. Our activity of customers wanting to get loans with us and do business with us are at a near-term high, Loesch said. The SBA has rolled out new anti-fraud measures for its loan programs that so far aren't creating a bottleneck. That includes citizenship verification and date of birth verification. However, the SBA has also put in place new fees that could result in thousands of dollars in extra costs for small business owners. Loesch said fees have always been a part of how the program is supported and that there have been ebbs and flows. The fees come after several had been eliminated during COVID-19, and Loesch said he hadn't seen them impact current lender appetite. In its announcement about the new loan fees, the SBA says from 2022 to 2024, the agency did not collect on more than $460 million in upfront lender fees, with a negative cash flow of $397 million in fiscal 2024. And Andy Medici also contributed to this story. And the last article in this cover story series celebrating small business is written by Kate Tracy. After big surge, local small business sales start to soften. Neil Isaacs, a local business broker, sold a laundromat last November. That in and of itself may not be remarkable, except for the fact that he received a whopping 622 inquiries from people interested in buying it. That's probably a record, and that's definitely a testimonial to laundromats and what's happening online, Isaac said, alluding to the number of social media influencers who promote laundromat ownership. There's a ton of demand for laundromats. Isaac sold the laundromat in 80 days, a quick turnaround compared to many of his deals in the Triangle. Similarly, a handful of local attorney Peter Hanna's closings in the past 6 months have also involved laundromats, vending machines, or similar businesses. I wonder if those sales would have occurred but for social media, said Hanna, an attorney at Hoppler, Wilms, and Hanna. The laundromat deal is just one example among many that's indicative of a shifting environment for small business transactions in the Triangle. In 2023, Isaac's brokerage, VR Business Brokers, had 1,721 inquiries from interested business buyers. In 2024, that number rose to 4,248. Isaacs is coming off a record-selling quarter during first quarter 2025, much of that due to carryover from a strong Q4 in 2024. Now, Isaacs is seeing a softening market where businesses may be making the same amount of revenue, but profits are slimming down. They may be busier than ever, but they might be making less money than ever, Isaacs said. His brokerage is receiving double the volume of business owners looking to sell compared to this time last year. Part of that is due to current economic uncertainty and rising costs of goods. We're getting calls from people that are saying, I've been through COVID. We've survived that. I think this next thing is this new uncertainty. I don't want to go through another round of that, so let's sell now, Isaacs said. The silver tsunami, a phrase that refers to the large number of baby boomers reaching retirement age and selling their businesses, is stronger than ever now. In January, Isaac sold a $2 million plumbing business owned by a longtime owner ready to retire. There's definitely more retiring boomers right now than ever because the COVID pause has been lifted, he said. Among the successful sectors for business transactions are the trades, HVAC, electrical, plumbing, or other services you can't buy on Amazon, Isaac said, in addition to healthcare services and more. Hanna estimated that nearly 60% of his transactions occurred because a seller was ready to retire, a significant increase from the previous year. They've invested a lot of goodwill into their businesses over the years, and buyers are looking at those opportunities to come in and either A, get a deal, or B, take on a business that's been tried and true. And I'm excited for that trend to continue, Hanna said. Another trend elsewhere when it comes to small business is the infiltration of private equity. Previously, private equity firms were only interested in businesses making $1 million or more. That's not the case anymore, according to Isaacs. I've had some private equity looking at businesses that only had $250,000, and typically they would never look at something like that small, Isaac said. Hanna also noticed the same uptick in private equity activity, especially in certain business sectors like trade and medical practices. He provided legal counsel for 4 private equity deals in the last 6 months compared to 1 private equity deal between October 2023 and May 2024. You can tell that those guys have got definitely a treasure trove of money and assets to start investing in these acquisitions, he said. From October 2024 to the present, Hannah said that the number of closings are about the same as October 2023 to May 2024. The difference is that the deals themselves have gotten larger. Hannah has started to hear concerns from business brokers regarding the Trump administration's tariffs, especially when it comes to HVAC, plumbing, construction, and other businesses in the trades. Those are folks that, you know, are obviously going to be impacted directly or indirectly by the tariff situation, and I think the brokers are worried about their listings at this point in time, he said. Hannah, whose firm helps business owners with LLC information, has noticed LLC formation is down this year compared to last. Still, the uncertainty of the current economic climate is his biggest challenge right now. Could we go from doing X amount of business closings per month to that dropping off a ledge because there is a sense of this is not the right time? He asked. I think business sales are still going well, and I just hope that whatever's happening with these tariffs are short term and we can continue to move forward. In an environment where interest rates are high, buyers are being selective, there are a number of practical things sellers can do to make their businesses more attractive to buyers, including creating a good culture, setting up standard operating procedures, and making sure contracts will transition well, according to Chris Flowers, the financial advisor at Edward Jones. It's not just working harder, it's maybe working smarter and focusing on things that are going to be appealing to a buyer and making the transition smooth, he said. Isaac's advice in times of uncertainty may sound simplistic, plan ahead. But there are many ways to implement that advice. For example, a gym owner recently pre-negotiated a price in his lease for what it would cost him to get out of the lease. He was planning his worst-case scenario, going into a long-term agreement. That's smart business there, especially in these times, Isaac said. Exit planning is essential. If a company could live for 100 or 300 or 1400 years, then why are we imagining that we're going to be the one to guide this company in the future? Why are we not doing more exit planning? Because we're not going to live as long as our companies could, Isaac said. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle happenings, written by Dane Huffman. Local hardware store still thrives. In an era dominated by big boxes, Burke Brothers finds a path to success. In an era dominated by the big box stores, a Raleigh hardware store on Hillsborough Street that dates to the Great Depression is thriving. Paul Burke started Burke Brothers Hardware Store in 1936, and the business stayed in the family until recent years. Jeff Hastings, who had worked at a rival big box store, took a job at Burke and then bought a third of the business about 10 years ago. A few years after that, he bought the rest. Now, Hastings and his wife, Leslie, and son, Tommy, work at the store, and their daughter, Ashley, works part-time while a student at NC State University. The Hastings have had their challenges, as the pandemic and supply chain issues have shattered many small business hopes. Small businesses are not for the faint of heart, Leslie Hastings said. But the store has roared back, and its annual revenue of $2 million is ahead of 2019. Jeff Hastings serves on multiple boards and enjoys interaction with people, and the company benefits from a steady stream of business from state government, NC State, and others. Leslie Hastings said about 70% of their business comes from commercial buyers. It helps that Burke offers a large variety of nuts and bolts, while the bigger chains focus more on common sizes and volume. It also helps that Burke has staff members with decades of experience. Customer service, she said, is essential to their success. The old school vibe doesn't hurt either. There's RC Cola in the refrigerator, fresh popcorn twice a week, and enough tools and gifts on the walls to supply Bedford Falls for a year. Leslie Hastings said 23-year-old Tommy Hastings will keep Burke Brothers as a family business. He'll take over the store one day, she said. I'll hopefully retire to a nice little island with some rum. Need space? Here's your shot at 700 acres. If you're looking for a chance to really stretch your legs, a new offering in Western North Carolina may be for you. An expansive ranch in Union Grove with more than 700 acres is for sale for $17.5 million, the Charlotte Business Journal reported. Named Badenyon Ranch, that's Badenyon, it includes 758 acres across Iredell and Wilkes counties, including a main lodge, two cottages, three storage buildings, and a 15-run dog kennel. It's also got a vineyard and beehives. Union Grove is located north of Statesville, off I-77. Durham leaders look at new ideas for 10-year plan. It never hurts to be looking ahead, and that's what happened April 23 at Downtown Durham Inc.'s annual State of Downtown Durham event. The organization unveiled its blueprint for 2035, where it envisions a number of improvements that includes eyeing sites for mixed-use entertainment districts and mixed-use development districts. The plan also outlines ideas for infusing more public art, office building reuse, alley improvements, and street connectivity. Ham to speak at women's as women's sports thrive. Women's sports is on the rise, so it's fascinating that one of America's top female athletes, Mia Hamm, will be the graduation speaker at UNC Chapel Hill on May 10 in Keenan Stadium. This marks the second straight year UNC has held graduation on Saturday night rather than Sunday morning. Hamm, a 1994 graduate of the school, had a staggering 278 points while leading the Tar Heels to four NCAA titles. She went on to score 158 international goals and win two world titles for the United States. And finally, summer bookings remain strong at RDU. At Raleigh-Durham International Airport, overall flight frequency remains up for the summer compared to last year, despite the uncertain economy. Airlines are offering nearly 6,600 flights at RDU in July, a 3.3% increase over a year ago, according to data from aviation research firm Cirium. Commercial airlines have made no secret about their plans to tighten schedules in some markets. At RDU, while some routes have tightened, enough frequency additions have been made to make up the difference. Certain routes are seeing major boosts this summer. Take the Southwest Airlines nonstops to Las Vegas and Phoenix, which took off just 8 times each last July. This year, the flights are scheduled 31 times in July, according to Cirium. Even Air Canada's nonstop service to Montreal is on the schedule 62 times in July, as opposed to 31 flights scheduled the same month last year. And now we turn to our top news stories in the Triangle Business Journal. The first one, written by Kate Tracy, Pittsburgh Brewery files for bankruptcy. Havoc Brewing to stay open as owner vows to stabilize cash flow. Another North Carolina brewery has filed for bankruptcy. Havoc Brewing Company, located in downtown Pittsburgh at 39 West Street, filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy reorganization on April 25. It's at least the third local brewery to file for bankruptcy in recent weeks as the industry faces headwinds, including tariffs on aluminum from Canada and changing consumer habits. Carey's Cotton House Craft Brewers recently filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy. Also this month, Brewprint Brewing Company filed for Chapter 7 bankruptcy after closing its tap room last year. Havoc plans to stay open amid bankruptcy proceedings. Founder Michael Pipkin said in a statement that the Chapter 11 filing gives us the breathing room we need to restructure, stabilize our cash flow, and invest in the future of Havoc Brewing. Despite growing sales since opening in Pittsburgh 2 years ago, the brewery has been confronted with difficulties such as construction delays, higher interest rates, and supply chain issues. Our focus remains exactly where it's always been, creating exceptional beer, fostering community, and building a company that stands the test of time, Pipkin said. We are deeply grateful to our customers, our employees, and our investors for believing in Havoc Brewing. The best is yet to come. Havoc lists between $1 million and $10 million in both estimated assets and estimated liabilities, according to its bankruptcy filing. Bankruptcy documents list Utah-based Celtic Bank as a creditor with a blanket lien for $1,463,112. Celtic Bank provides a number of loans to businesses, including Small Business Association 7A loans, according to its website. SBA loans have appeared on bankruptcy filings for a host of small businesses in the Triangle over the past year. Other creditors include American Express for $155,210 and Ford Motor Credit for $51,089. Greg Stafford owns Havoc's building through Catfish Hagen, LLC. And our next article is written by Lauren Onasorge, How UNC's Hard Knocks Deal Collapsed. Bill Belichick's program was on the brink of a deal with NFL Films. NFL Films had agreed to pay UNC Chapel Hill $200,000 to film an offshoot of the HBO sports series Hard Knocks centered on new football coach Bill Belichick. But over the span of 8 days, it all fell apart. The plan for Hard Knocks offseason with Bill Belichick and the Tar Heels was a 5-part documentary series to debut this summer on HBO, starring the Super Bowl-winning coach. A quote attributed to Belichick in a draft press release about the show said he'd been waiting for the right time to partner with Hard Knocks, and that the time had arrived. But emails provided to TBJ through a public records request showed that after pushing for the project, NFL Films became uncomfortable about the final details and the project was canceled. The kickoff. UNC officials seemed enthusiastic about the potential series. Jessica Boddy, Vice President of Commercial Operations and Business Affairs at NFL Films, submitted a filming request February 24. Production would start March 1st, and the schedule called for filming on campus between March 1 and April 21, as well as between August 1st and September 1st. The NFL proposed several filming sites, from Belichick's temporary residence to the Komen practice complex and Keenan Stadium. NFL Films wanted to have six crews at the spring game, April 20th. But the last-minute nature of the request didn't fit with the university's process. Rick Steinbacher, Senior Associate Athletic Director for UNC, wrote in an email February 24 that this is the first documentation I've seen on this in regard to the proposed TV series. On February 25, Erica Rosenthal, a publicist for HBO, sent UNC a draft press announcement giving the school just a few hours for edits before she hoped to go live. In a response, Kevin Best, Senior Director of Media Relations at UNC, responded, "We have a process for authorizing commercial filming on campus, which includes a location agreement, certificate of insurance, and other steps that need to be finalized. Athletics is also inquiring with the ACC office about broadcast rights. Please hold off on an announcement until we have more of these issues finalized and cleared." On February 27, UNC sent over a draft location agreement with Sarah Throckmorton, Assistant University Counsel, promising to follow up on fees that were still being discussed internally. Those fees would later be proposed at $200,000 with an out-of-pocket expense cap of $50,000, a sum that could increase if needed during the course of production, according to Michelle Verzi, manager of business affairs for NFL Films. NFL Films was referred as Autumn Winds in the contracts referred to. On February 28, it still seemed to be full steam ahead, with Rosenthal writing Best that the teams were still aligning on final timing. The fumble. The date of the press release kept being pushed back. On March 1, UNC officials said they had received permission to proceed with the contracts. "Thanks again for helping make this happen," wrote Carolyn Pratt, Director of University Governance and Associate University Counsel at UNC. But on March 3, it all took a turn after a phone call. "As discussed, we will not proceed with the production of the Belichick project," Boddy of NFL Films wrote university officials. "Unfortunately, the conversation took a turn that we were not comfortable with." When asked for clarification, a UNC spokesperson referred TBJ to the Hard Knocks team, which didn't immediately respond. Canes players among those scooping up luxury homes in the Triangle. This article is written by Kaylee Thompson. As the Carolina Hurricanes once again pursue the Stanley Cup, here's a look at what the players are coming home to after the games. Andrei Svechnikov owns two homes, one purchased in July 2022 and the other in October 2024. The most recent purchase was a home in North Hills for $5.15 million. It spans 6,218 square feet and has 5 bedrooms and 8 bathrooms. Built in 2024, it features a swimming pool, sauna, fire pit, a wet bar, and built-ins. His other home backs the 18th fairway of the North Ridge Country Club and is on the market for just under $3 million. Canes captain Jordan Stahl bought a home in the new Shadow Creek Estates gated community in North Raleigh for $5.1 million. The home is 8,078 square feet, sits on 1.1 acres, and was built in 2023. The Stahls bought the land in 2022. The custom home includes 3.5 bathrooms, a swimming pool, fireplaces, and an expansive patio. Sebastian Aho paid $3.675 million for a 5-bedroom home in North Hills. There are 7 bathrooms and a 4-car garage in this 5,940 square-foot home. Built in 2022, Aho purchased it in October 2023. Another North Hills purchase is the home of Jesperi Katkanimi. He paid $3.1 million soon after it was built in 2023. Totaling 5,435 square feet, the home boasts 5 bedrooms, 7 bathrooms, a swimming pool, hot tub, screen porch, and outdoor fireplace. The kitchen is decked out with a 6-burner range with griddle and double ovens, built-in cabinet refrigerator, and scullery with under-counter fridge, ice maker, second dishwasher, and a microwave drawer. Also in the Northridge Country Club community of Raleigh is the home of Jacob Slavin, who paid $2.5 million for it in late 2021. Records show it was a new build by Raleigh Custom Homes. The 5,717-square-foot home has 5 bedrooms, 6 bathrooms, and a 4-car garage. Inside is a game room with bar and scullery, a loft, 2 laundry rooms, wet bar, and a flex room. And the last of our top news stories in the Triangle Business Journal, written by Lauren Onasorge. Jet builder eyes NC for manufacturing plant. California startup is looking at sites across U.S. to put what could be up to 11,000 jobs. Another next-generation aircraft company is eyeing North Carolina for what could eventually be an 11,000-job manufacturing operation. Nautilus, spelled N-A-T-I-L-U-S, Nautilus, a California startup working to develop hyper-efficient blended-wing aircraft, is looking for U.S. sites for what initially will be a 250,000-square-foot factory making cargo jets. The plan is to hire more than 300 workers for the factory in Phase 1. Nautilus CEO and co-founder Alexei Matyushev said the ultimate vision calls for more than 11,000 workers. Meanwhile, another California company is looking at the state for what could one day be a 10,000-job aircraft factory. As Nautilus looks for manufacturing sites, North Carolina is a very real possibility. Likely competitors include Georgia, Alabama, Florida, and Virginia. It's becoming more clear to us that as we scale up manufacturing into these large facilities, there's not enough land around at the company's site in San Diego, Matyushev said, adding that the skilled labor costs are not sustainable in California. The first phase of the site selection is information gathering, he said. Before any conversations happen with state officials, Nautilus wants to know what airport infrastructure looks like in a particular region. And that could prove the differentiator, as the company wants a site in proximity to at least an 8,000-foot runway, preferably 10,000 feet. And it can't be a very active airport, Matyushev said, noting that RDU wouldn't fit the bill. The company operates at Brownfield Municipal Airport south of San Diego near the Mexican border. A potential fit in North Carolina is the Global Transpark in Kinston, which is home to manufacturing operations for companies like Spirit AeroSystems and has a 11,500-foot runway, or less active commercial airports such as Piedmont Triad International in Greensboro. The proximity of other companies like Boom Supersonic in Greensboro and Spirit in Kinston brings benefits such as a skilled workforce. Having access to talent is wildly important, Matyushev said. But it brings competition for that talent too, all of which will be analyzed as Nautilus whittles down the site possibilities to a short list, he said. It's, can the state sustain more aerospace and aviation, or should we look someplace else, he said. Matyushev envisions 2 co-located manufacturing facilities. Phase 1 would focus on a product that would transport freight and require about 300 workers. Phase 2 would be its entrance into the narrow-body jet space dominated by Boeing and Airbus with its commercial passenger jet dubbed the Horizon. With the Horizon, the vision is much bigger, to the tune of 11,000 jobs. The company said in a recent press release that initially a Phase 2 facility would be about 3,000 jobs. And now we turn to the reporter pages in the Triangle Business Journal, and we start with Lauren Onasorge's page, Transportation and Technology. Sanford Airport to add new tower. New air traffic control tower, a sign of growth at Raleigh Executive Jetport. A growing airport near Raleigh that hosts luxury jets, corporate planes, and top-level executive meetings is getting a permanent air traffic control tower. Raleigh Executive Jetport in Sanford has snagged Federal Aviation Administration approval for a new tower, which will allow flights to be managed by a trained air traffic controller from the airport. Work is underway to find a site on airport grounds for the tower, as well as to develop design specifications for construction. Airport Director Bob Holtz said the next step is the siting process. 2 or 3 sites will be picked that meet the FAA criteria for a tower, and depending on where they are on the field and what the topography is there, that will dictate the height of the tower and the cost, he said. Hoyt said it's likely to be a $6 million to $10 million project, but that's not accounting for potential complications such as tariffs, supply chain issues, and inflation. The project could be completed as early as within 3 years and would further enhance both safety and efficiency, as right now there is no tower assisting planes coming in and out of the airport. In a statement, Carter Keller, chairman of the Sanford Lee County Airport Authority, said the tower will create even more opportunities for companies looking for a place where they can avoid large commercial passenger aircraft while still operating efficiently and safely. The tower would happen in partnership with the FAA. In addition to the air traffic control tower it operates directly, the FAA has 265 air traffic control towers across the country in what's called its Contract Tower Program, a partnership between the FAA and local airports, as is planned in this case. Right now, 236 aircraft are based at the airport, which does about 75,000 operations each year. IBM's push could mean jobs in the Triangle. IBM recently said it will invest nearly $150 billion in the U.S. over the next 5 years, a move that could mean significant hiring in the Triangle. The company, which has thousands of employees based in Research Triangle Park, said the investment was to fuel the economy and to accelerate its role as the global leader in computing. It includes more than $30 billion in research and development to advance the firm's domestic manufacturing of mainframe and quantum computers. IBM declined to make executives available for comment, but an analyst thinks the news will mean R&D investments in North Carolina. Dan Ives, managing director and senior equity research analyst at Wedbush Securities, said he suspects that given IBM's large presence here, North Carolina will play a big role. A lot of the investments going forward are going to be AI and technology driven, he said. I think it bodes well for Red Hat, too. IBM owns Red Hat, a cloud software company headquartered in downtown Raleigh. Red Hat has grown into a critical revenue stream for IBM. In terms of manufacturing, IBM makes its mainframes in Poughkeepsie, New York. Ives calls IBM's latest quarter a clear sign of success in a period of uncertainty. Raleigh prepares for traffic impact around Arena. As plans for the $1 billion Lenovo Center development advance in West Raleigh, state and city officials are working to ensure the area is prepared for heavier traffic. In April, the Raleigh City Council approved a rezoning request for the 80 acres surrounding the arena to allow for new hotels, restaurants, apartment buildings, office space, and parking decks. To support the growth, significant road work is underway and being planned by the North Carolina Department of Transportation, much of it in the pipeline for years. Two of the biggest projects are in their final months. NCDOT is lowering the grade of Blue Ridge Road at Hillsborough Street, making it an underpass to avoid the railroad. And it's in the final stages of upgrading the oldest section of Interstate 440 nearby. Both projects should be complete this year or in early 2026, said Becca Gallus, division engineer with NCDOT. And our last story is new flights to West Virginia are possible for RDU. Raleigh-Durham International Airport could be getting new flights to rural West Virginia. In March, the U.S. Department of Transportation put out a request for proposals from air carriers interested in providing essential air service, or EAS, to places like Lewisburg, West Virginia, starting in November. EAS contracts ensure that rural communities have access to scheduled air service. Without subsidies, the math for many of these flights just wouldn't make business sense, said Martha Livesay, airport director at Lewisburg's Greenbrier Valley Airport, or LWB, in West Virginia, near the Greenbrier Resort. We need subsidizing because sometimes we wouldn't have enough passengers to cover the cost of having the airline there, she said. And now we turn to Kaylee Thompson's page, Real Estate and Development. Building sells far below 2020 price. West Raleigh building sold for $5.7 million, well below the $11 million it once got. An office building in West Raleigh recently sold for a little more than half its price from 5 years ago as the market continues to face headwinds. The building at 5565 Centerview Drive on the border with Cary sold for just over $5.7 million, according to Wake County deed records. Pergament Properties of New York bought the building from Trigate Capital of Dallas, which bought it in 2020 for nearly $11 million as part of a portfolio deal that included three other Raleigh buildings. The drop in price could be due to low occupancy. The leasing rate for the building is 36%, according to Triangle Business Journal space data. At the time of the 2020 sale, it was 73% leased. Built in 1999, the building has 75,276 square feet of space. Tenants include Benchcraft Company, Edward Jones, Fastlane Consulting and Education Services, and Teradata. Trigate performed renovations to the building's lobby and restrooms. The three-story building has a fitness center. Available office suites rent for $26.50 per square foot, according to marketing from JLL. Positioned between Lake Johnson and Interstate 40, the property is 5.52 acres and has a total assessed value of just over $9.1 million. Judson McMillan with York Properties represented the buyer in the transaction. West Raleigh's office vacancy rate for fourth quarter 2024 was 17.78%. Downtown Raleigh's office vacancy rate was 15%. Saville's Q1 office market report for Raleigh-Durham stated that Class A asking rents hit a record $31.76 per square foot, up 3.6% year over year, while the overall average rose 2.9% to $30.14 per square foot. This growth reflects the ongoing flight to quality, with tenants consolidating into high-performance, amenity-rich buildings in mixed-use or highly connected locations. Compact living trends up in Triangle. Paying less for an apartment in the Triangle is possible as long as it's not very big. Studios and one-bedroom apartments make up for 56% of new apartments in the region, according to Rent Cafe's recent apartment size report based on Yardi Matrix data. Fewer two-bedroom units have been introduced as developers choose a mix of sizes that puts the share heavily on smaller units. A spokesperson for Rent Cafe noted that Raleigh's apartment scene has undergone a transformation, leaning towards smaller units and seeing a drop in average apartment size. This shift reflects changing renter preferences, with more people opting for smaller, more efficient living arrangements. People choosing to live in smaller spaces could be due to the cost of living factor. Paying more than $1,500 a month for a studio in downtown Raleigh or North Hills is easier to swallow with so many surrounding amenities and high walkability. While rental rates have remained stagnant over the past year, the average rent in March was $1,580, Rent Cafe said. Moving to suburban apartments doesn't make a huge difference in rent. Prices at the newly opened Town Triangle Crossing near Triangle Town Center range from $1,547 for a one-bedroom to $2,758 for a three-bedroom. Wake Stone expands final industrial space. An industrial park's high occupancy prompted the developers to increase the size of its final building. Wake Stone Property Company, having just opened its sixth industrial building, has increased the size of its seventh and final building by 30% in its Hinton Oaks Industrial Park in Knightdale. Wake Stone Vice President Bose Bratton said it's still seeing strong demand and that with the health of the industrial market, the company decided to get as much square footage as the site would allow. Previously, Wake Stone planned a 164,000 square foot building. The park will have a 1.17 million square feet of industrial space with buildings 1 through 5 fully leased up. Industrial space is in high demand with a 7.62 vacancy rate in fourth quarter 2024, according to Triangle Business Journal space data. At Hinton Oaks, the site work will begin on the final building this summer. Delivery of the building is expected in early 2027. And finally, Raleigh developers see success with medical offices. A Raleigh developer is planning another medical office building following success with other properties. Atlas Stark has filed site plans with the City of Raleigh for a medical office building adjacent to its recently opened MOB at the corner of Six Forks Road and Barrett Drive. The building will be 55,080 square feet with a four-level garage deck. Development manager Hunter DeFee said Atlas Stark is looking to build upon its success with this new project. Situated on 1.18 acres, the building will be three stories and have a 5,190 square foot outdoor amenity area. Currently, there is a three-story office building housing the Raleigh Regional Office of the North Carolina Department of Environmental Quality on site. And now we turn to healthcare and life sciences, this page written by Zach Ezone. Chapel Hill firm raises more cash, well, adds more investors as interest in its health engagement platform grows. A Chapel Hill health technology firm has raised $30 million from investors to fuel its growth. The new capital will support Wells' investments in its health engagement platform and the company's North Carolina operations. The raise brings Wells' total funding to more than $150 million and puts the firm on the near-term path to profitability. Co-founder David Wary describes Well as focused on bringing concierge health to the masses. Its technology helps individuals with issues related to sleep, anxiety, grief, and parenting, among others. Members can also use its platform to navigate questions around billing or finding a doctor. Well's platform, which leverages predictive AI and large-scale models, can respond to requests from members with specific needs while also contacting members directly with personalized nudges that predict what might be relevant to that person at that time, Wary said. We think of ourselves as a daily health partner, he said. We focus a ton on being a really frequent, trusted platform in the lives of our members and really there for them in a highly personalized way. Well sells its platform to large companies for their employees to access. Last year, Well launched a new direct member approach through a partnership with Sam's Club, which allows members of the retail giant to sign up for the platform for free. The funding is the result of three of its largest customers wanting to invest in the business. Some existing investors also participated in the round, where he said. The funding will support growth as Well is seeing memberships and revenue both increase more than 50% annually. The raise gives Well capital to invest in technology and hiring. The company, which has leveraged artificial intelligence since its founding, sees opportunities with developments in generative AI. Duke Spinout adds cash for orthopedic implants. A medical device firm in Research Triangle Park that specializes in 3D printed implants has raised $38 million to support its growth. The capital from new and existing investors will support Restore 3D as it launches new orthopedic implant products. The funding also provides a runway to reach profitability within the next couple of years. The investment firm Summer Value Partners led the financing round. With this funding, the company is planning this year a limited market release for new shoulder, knee, hip, and ankle products, with a full market release scheduled for next year, said Ken Gall, co-founder and chief commercial officer. Since spinning out of Duke University in 2018, Restore 3D has grown to a fully operational medical device company with about 400 employees. About half the employees are based in North Carolina, where the company has its headquarters and a manufacturing facility. Gall said the ability to gain traction in the market has been both fast and slow. We're approaching $100 million in revenue, and in that sense, for a business as young as ours, that's pretty fast, Gall said. But it still takes time. Healthcare, notoriously, can be a little slow. Surgeons at more than 1,000 U.S. facilities in the U.S. have used Restore 3D's implants. Biostorage firm to expand in Nash County. A life sciences company is planning the next phase of its expansion amid growing demand for biostorage services. GXP Storage anticipates beginning construction this year on a second facility at its 30-acre campus in Nash County. The company stores samples, containers, and pallets of material in a range of temperatures from controlled ambient to ultra-low and cryogenic settings. These are regulated materials for drug manufacturing as well as biomedical materials. CEO Jeff Johnson said the facility is seeing demand from both researchers and manufacturers. It added 25 clients in the first quarter. A lack of storage space for these sorts of materials is driving demand. In recent months, amid uncertainty around tariffs, large pharmaceutical companies like Amgen, Merck, and Eli Lilly and Company have announced plans to invest billions in new facilities to produce medicines in North Carolina and elsewhere. And finally, public company in RTP acquired for nearly $4 billion. A German pharmaceutical company is acquiring a drug developer with operations in Research Triangle Park for nearly $4 billion. Merck KGaA, not related to Merck & Company, is purchasing SpringWorks Therapeutics for $47 per share in cash in a deal valued at $3.9 billion. The deal comes a few months after SpringWorks secured regulatory approval of its second product. The deal has an enterprise value of $3.4 billion and is expected to close in the second half of this year. The acquisition expands Merck KGaA's presence in the U.S. and gives the company two products approved by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. SpringWorks is headquartered in Stamford, Connecticut. And now we turn to the Greater Triangle page written by Ben Tobin. Homes planned for Smithfield. Nearly 100 homes would rise about 6 miles from downtown Smithfield. A nearly 100-home neighborhood may be coming soon to Johnston County via an active developer in the area. Crantock Land, an LLC tied to developer Bradley Stansel, purchased a little more than 80 acres off Black Creek Road in southern Johnston County for $2.9 million this month, according to Johnston County deed records. The land has a Smithfield address and sits roughly 6 miles west of the downtown area. Stansel said he plans to develop a neighborhood with dozens of single-family homes. The land is zoned for residential agricultural use per county records and thus would not have to be rezoned for the project. We're moving forward with plans to develop 98 single-family residential lots intended for a regional home builder, Stansel wrote in an email. Vertical construction is anticipated to begin in the first quarter of 2026. Stansel said that estimated sales prices have not yet been determined. This isn't the only recent splash Stansel has made in the area. Triangle Business Journal reported in September 2023 that Anger's IOM Developers Incorporated, a group tied to Stansel and others, purchased more than 180 acres east of Anger. The land sits southeast of Old Stage Road North and north of Benson Road. Stansel said at the time that the project is called Tobacco Road and will consist of 182 single-family lots. He said he estimates homes will sell in the $600,000s range. Johnston County remains one of the hottest areas in the state. As of July 1, the county had about 250,000 people, according to the U.S. Census Bureau. That's way above the 169,000 it had in 2010, as developers have snatched up what had been rural property that provides cheaper land to build and also access to the explosive growth across Wake County. Smithfield is only half an hour from Raleigh. VinFast reports losses of $3 billion for 2024. Vietnamese electric vehicle manufacturer VinFast saw revenues and sales surge in 2024, but that hasn't stopped the company from hemorrhaging billions of dollars. VinFast reported a little shy of $3.2 billion in losses for 2024, according to an earnings report released April 24. That net loss keeps going up from prior years. It was roughly $2.4 billion, $2 billion, and $1.4 billion in 2023, 2022, and 2021, respectively. The losses come as VinFast has not fulfilled its promise of launching a $4 billion, 7,500-job vehicle assembly facility in Chatham County. The company announced last year that the plant wouldn't open until 2028 at the earliest, 4 years behind the initial schedule. And with a 25% tariff on all imported vehicles into the United States, VinFast may have an even harder time gaining a foothold in the country. Nonetheless, Lee Thi Thu Thai, chairwoman of the VinFast Board of Directors, said during the earnings call that 2024 was a year of healthy growth in the United States, with the U.S. accounting for approximately 4% of global deliveries. VinFast delivered 97,399 electric vehicles last year, which the company says is a 192% increase from the year prior. Of that amount, 87,890 were delivered to customers in Vietnam. Pinehurst Golf Club preps for expansion. A private country club in Pinehurst is planning a sweeping expansion under new ownership. The Pinehurst Village Council voted during a meeting recently to approve a major site plan for the Pine Wild Country Club located off Glasgow Drive. The approved plan includes an expanded clubhouse increasing from 8,200 square feet to 20,139 square feet, the addition of a 3,750 square foot fitness center, and an expansion of parking spaces from 116 to 318. And we'll stop there as the rest of the article mentions that plan still needs to be approved. Our last reporter page, written by Kate Tracy, Retail and Restaurants. Ex-Red Lobster space gets new life. Durham spot is La Buena Vida's third and the 12th overall location for Jalmex. Salvador Alvarez has a thing for buildings that were formerly chain restaurants. He and his business partner, Juan Sanchez, are bringing La Buena Vida to a 7,000-square-foot space in Durham that was previously Red Lobster. The restaurant is located southwest of downtown Durham at 4416 Durham Chapel Hill Boulevard. And we'll stop there as the rest of the story just goes into more detail. Fitness giant replaces closed Big Lots retailer. A fitness chain is stretching into a former Big Lots store in Raleigh. Planet Fitness has taken over at 6560 Glenwood Avenue in the Town Ridge Shopping Center. The gym plans to open by the end of the year, spokesperson confirmed. Planet Fitness is headquartered in Hampton, New Hampshire. The gym has locations across the country as well as Australia, Canada, Mexico, Panama, Puerto Rico, and Spain. The Town Ridge Shopping Center location will be the company's 15th location in the Triangle. Wake County Records list the building owner as the Marvin W. Nelson Trust and development company Zeisler Morgan Properties, based in Cleveland. Holly Springs project adds more local retail. Retail leasing at a project at the intersection of New Hill Road and Green Oaks Parkway in Holly Springs is nearly complete. Oakview Commons, owned by a subsidiary of Helix Ventures, has landed 12 tenants ahead of its first stores opening this spring. The three retail buildings are now 85% leased, said Mara Keener with Trustwell Property Group. Recent retail leases include Verge Yoga, Astoria Nail Bar, and coffee shop Thanks a Latte. The first business to open will be the salon Image Studios. The project also will include a 135-room hotel, Keener said. Based on our long experience in the market, we have found bringing in small business owners with roots in the area has led to more sustainable developments with greater community engagement, which is why we are committed to supporting our fellow local businesses who can provide top-notch services to the neighborhoods they love as well, Keener said in an email. And finally, Lowe's Foods to close store in Cary by mid-May. Lowe's Foods will close a Cary store in a busy corridor. The grocery chain based in Winston-Salem is closing its store at 930 High House Road in the Preston Corner Shopping Center at the intersection with Cary Parkway near Prestonwood Country Club. The store's last day will be May 14. Kelly Davis, Senior Director of Guest Engagement at Lowe's, said the store's lease is up and the company decided not to renew. She declined to share the store's finances. Shoppers who frequented the store will not be deprived of grocery options. There is a Publix, two Harris Teeters, two Food Lions, H Mart, Fresh Market, Target, and Trader Joe's, all within a 10-minute drive of the Lowe's Foods location. And we will go ahead and stop there as we have run out of time for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The Triangle Business Journal is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. So long until next time, and thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.